Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rap room. Tongues won't be bit. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We here to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic, even the random. I hope that you ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the rap room.
That's it. That's all I got to say.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest.
Yeah, that's right. I was cool like that.
He's so great.
And you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it street.
What?
We keep it opinionated. Uh-huh. We keep it what?
2015. What's up, people?
See, our guests looking at us like, y'all know all them numbers?
We can count high.
Okay.
Like, no, you guys are tight. You know what you're doing.
Exactly. All right, stop what you're doing, because I'm about to ruin the image and the style that you're used to.
What?
You look funny.
Oh, what?
See, you never know.
We about to do the Humpty Hump dance right now.
You never know. See,
we about to break
we just
out.
Break out of some shit.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
My ringtone is I Get Around.
Is it really?
Oh, shut up. Oh, my God.
First song I bought on iTunes, mm-hmm. Kiss You Back.
I kiss you, then you kiss me back. Do what you like. That was good music back then, y'all.
Anyway, for y'all kids out there, that was for y'all. You know what I mean? Some of y'all old heads like we are. I know I am. She don't like to say she an old head.
What you talking about? I'm a professional 27-year-old. I got a PhD in 27-ism.
Yeah, exactly. So you know how we do it on the Rant Room. Again, on this show, we discuss entertainment, mm-hmm. TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, mm-hmm. stories, craft, and what else?
Shit like that.
That's how you like to say it.
Yes.
You guys are fantastic. I wish people could see what I see.
Exactly. You know what? People always ask us to film this shit. I'm like, if we film it, it's going to be boring. Because then we're going to be conscious and worried about,
keep
you know.
Oh, at least you stepped your game up this week. I mean, last time I was here, we had like, we had salad dressing packet mix.
You know what, Shuttle, check it out. You know how you get them people giving them big gift baskets?
Yes.
It's got all that stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really nice, though. So I was like, ooh, I'll take a little of these chocolate things here. I'll take some of these crackers and this dip or whatever it was. Because I was rushing to get here. And I just so happened. Anyway, long story short. Usually I bring some shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's a spread.
Mm-hmm. You know, usually I have more shit than this.
Right.
Anyway, she keep getting on me for bringing me my little cookies and stuff like that. So, you know.
Well, we're trying to eat healthy. And then I thought, you know what? I just give up. But then I give up.
I bring all that fruit. Half of don't try even one of them.
I do. Usually eat the straw. I'm just not, you know what? I'm not a melon person.
You got cantaloupes.
You know, can you get you some melon?
I'm not a melon person.
Oh, here we go. Like, this is worse than
the. Oh, I think we got to open it too.
It's the texture.
This is worse than the candy. It's the mushy texture. We can't do it.
It is.
Anyhow.
So, anyway, y'all see how we're doing on the Rant Room. We're going to be hella silly today. So, you guys hear her voice. That's my girl, Lisa Bola Kaja.
Hey.
We call her the Street Nerdist. With a T. Like she a pimp.
A capital T.
Like a pimp.
Yeah. Techno. Pimp. Pimp. That's my song by Joy.
She started getting jiggy with it, didn't she?
Like I was going on the block, like, where
exactly.
my money? Where my money?
Exactly. So that's my girl, Lisa Bola Kaja, mm-hmm. you guys. We call her the Street Nerdist. And I am your host, Hilliard Guest.
Yes, right.
So you know what? If you grown, let's get it in.
Buckle up.
So we got my girl, my new sis, mm-hmm. my home team, my road dog.
How many and other? A Canadian. And
oh, yeah.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll give her one of them. You
I
know.
Love that.
She don't even say the A's and all that stuff. She's too cool for that. Do mm-hmm. you? You don't live where you guys
I, you
do
know,
that.
Every once in a while I'll slip in an A.
You've been Americanized, haven't you?
I always used to speak proper. I'm joking. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Exactly. So we got my girl, Chernold. I can always go struck on your name. Chernold Orn. Chernold Edwards.
Yes.
Chernold. God, I Shuttle thought my Edwards. Name was hard.
I love that name.
Isn't that cute?
Thank you.
I'm going to steal it from one of my... If you see it in a short story anytime soon, don't yell
That's
at me. I'll give you $2 for the name. I'm going to use that name. I love it.
I think I'm the only one.
Yeah, you probably are. That's why it's such a unique name. I thought,
well, try Hilliard Guess. There is not another on the planet, Jack.
And Reed thank God.
There's other pimps in the world like me. So y'all hear us. We got my girl, Chernold Edwards, you guys, writer, producer. And I gotta say, just so y'all don't know, y'all need to be looking this up right now. Put it on IMDb while you're at it. Google the bitch. Okay. Mm-hmm. Google the bitch. Okay. 2015 NAACP Image Award winner for outstanding writing in a television movie or miniseries. Okay. Mm-hmm. You better get it, girl.
Okay.
You better get it, okay. girl.
That was an honor.
It was.
Yeah, that was big.
Well, let's get into that right quick. Let's talk about that right quick.
All right.
How did it all happen for you? Let's talk about the movie, first of all.
Okay.
It was, I always go blank on that damn movie for some reason.
A Day Late and a Dollar.
Come on now, Tara McMillan.
Here. We got her here, don't we? I should just have her just say what
you
it
know,
is.
You know, really, I don't know what the problem is. Wait, you on here Googling. I'm like, but she right here.
So, Sharna,
do you see what technology has done to us people? The people right in the room with you, but we turn to our little pieces like, let me look. I'm like, she right there.
But look, since we're here, let's just go ahead and start with this one first, since we're here. Let's tell the kids about that and how it all came about for you.
Okay. Novel by Tara McMillan. Mm-hmm. And as you guys said, yes, I am Canadian. So I was trying to sort of dip my toe in the industry down here. Mm-hmm. And it was my third year coming down here legally.
See, look at that.
And trying to
basically, she came 5-6 more times, but just snuck in
for that visa expired. Yeah. Like, you know what? Exactly. I'm gonna make this movie and bounce.
So, I was trying to get into that upstream salmon swim of staffing, and it didn't work out that year because I had a sample that just wasn't very popular, which I'm sure we'll come back to. It was kind of a cable piece about a dysfunctional black family. Mm-hmm. And all the shows coming out that year were just, you know, superhero shows and robot shows. And so, you know, the sample has to fit.
That's right.
Girl, just turn into a dysfunctional black robot family. You in there.
That's my next sample. Okay. That's my next script. So I didn't get a lot of traction that year with that script, which was disappointing. Mm-hmm. But after staffing season, my agent called me and said, you know, well, we have a client here who's adapting a Tara McMillan movie. Looking for a writer to adapt a Tara McMillan novel into a script for Lifetime. And he'd like to meet with you because he read your sample. And I was like, oh, okay, that's exciting. And it turns out that the novel is about a dysfunctional
black family.
Uh-huh. So it wasn't that big of a stretch. To, you know.
Had you read Tara McMillan's books prior to this?
I had read a bunch of them. I hadn't read this one in particular. But so then I got the book and I read and I was like, oh my gosh, why can I hear my mother's voice in this?
Oh, right, one of those situations.
So, and it was also at that point where, you know, some, you know, if people are lucky, you'll get to this point. If you even get into it enough to get to this point, it's just like, oh, staffing season's over. You know, I don't care. So I'm just going to go to this meeting and say whatever I want.
Right. So you get free and you get brave. Yeah, I got nothing to lose. Fuck it. I'm coming in here. Yeah. And that's usually what
and then
that
you get
makes
job.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went in and it was like it was May and I was all sad about it. And I was just like, oh, I'm just going to go to this meeting and, you know, pitch myself. And the producer told me, he's like, oh, we're looking at playwrights, you know, we're looking at like Lynn Nottage for this. And I was like, yeah, MacArthur. Yeah. I love Lynn Nottage.
Right.
And I've seen a couple of her plays in Toronto. And I said, yes, you could go with Lynn Nottage.
Right.
If you want a screenplay that looks like a stage play.
Right.
Because I don't know how experienced Lynn is. I mean, I wouldn't go into Lynn's theater and say, you know, here's my, you know, my stage play.
Right.
I said, so you could do that and you would get a script eventually and it'd probably be very good. Or you could go with me and get your script now.
Okay. She sold herself. That's
production.
What I'm talking about. You better get it, girl.
You know what I'm saying?
And that's because I was already broken down from
and I love the fact that even though they were mentioning another writer, you were respectful enough, like, yeah, this writer's got skills too, but this is what I have to bring to the table. Yeah. I love that.
Like Susan Laurie Parks. I was like, Susan Laurie Parks is amazing.
Yeah.
But this is a mainstream. You're trying to make a mainstream
exactly.
movie.
Exactly.
So, you know, and then I went home thinking I'd never hear from them again. And then my agent says, like, oh, you got the job. Which was, it was also a bit of luck as well because, you know, you need the in with your agent to sort of just get on the pile.
Right.
But, you know, the agency wants somebody to get it, so you don't know how big the pile is. And apparently this pile was like steep.
Wow.
You know, so
wow.
You know, they got to my script in the pile and his reader started laughing and he was like, what's that? You're actually enjoying yourself. Give me that script.
You're having too much fun over there reading. What is that?
So that's how that happened. And then I went into Lifetime and I pitched my take on the movie and I don't really remember it because I was so sick And I was on so many like Tylenol and like pain. But whoop, I think it went well because they were like, here you go. You get the movie. So that was good. And then it took a while to write. Mm-hmm. My exec producer was also the director, and he has a very particular way of doing things and has a lot of experience in television movies.
Mm-hmm. Who was your director for it?
His name is Stephen Tolkien.
Okay.
And he ended up directing the movie. He's done a bunch of other things for Lifetime and just very specific. And so, you know, we worked rather closely off the first outline I wrote on my own. And oh, sorry, this is turning into a conversation about adaptation.
No, this is good to know. Yeah.
The first outline I wrote on my own because, you know, this was my first gig here and it gave me my work permit, so I didn't want to mess it up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's Terry. So I was like, look, I just got to, you know, just stick to what Terry wrote. Mm-hmm. And it was the worst outline I've ever turned in my life. Because the novel itself,
I love
if you read it,
it's like,
it was actually, we had a 7-hour meeting about how awful it was.
What?
Yeah. And like,
did they at least give you some food in the 7 hours you was in there?
Well, yeah, no, we started in his kitchen. They took me out to lunch and told me how.
Oh, thank God. Because at least you had some food, some comfort food to help you.
Well, then everybody in the restaurant heard how awful it was. And then I went back to his house to continue discussing how awful it was. Mm-hmm. But,
I mean, you're saying it was awful, but what specifically to you, what was it? What was it in the writing that you felt was awful?
I'll tell you, it was because I wanted to stick as closely to the novel as possible. But the novel, if you read it, it's all literally people sitting in their chairs thinking about what happened to them in the past.
Oh, interesting.
And they're thinking about this experience that they had, and they're, you know, and it's a lot of it is in first person and the perspective shift from chapter to chapter. So you try to write an outline like that, right. It's just you're watching a bunch of people lounging. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't know what's going on. So after that, I said to him, you know, I really need to step away from what happened in the novel and create things.
You got to take that creative license
to maintain the essence of the story.
Exactly.
So most of the scenes, if not all of the scenes, in the movie, we're not in the book.
Wow.
But the experiences were in the, so I would say it was like 98, 97%.
So you would stay with the theme.
But it was more like she externalized the internal dialogue in the book and actually put it and made it work in the film. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the most significant changes we made, because each of the characters lived in a different city. Mm-hmm. One was in Chicago, one was in Torrance here in Los Angeles County, one was in New York maybe. But we put everybody in the same city. Everybody had to live in the same city. Right. So how are they going to interact?
See, that's what did me. We just did an episode about writing biopics, and we did it from our point of views of projects that we have that keep getting optioned or whatever, And but we were talking about the number one rule is you have to have your license. You have to make license for the script. Mm-hmm. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry. This is interesting.
Yeah. So the writing process was really rigorous, but once I, you know, stepped away from it and I got a handle on it. Mm-hmm. And the story was, you know, and I broke the story and then worked with him to, you know, because it wasn't my, pardon me, second television movie that I'd written, not the first one that I'd worked on because I was an exec in Canada, but, you know, you write to specific things. It's like every act out is like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, so the audience has to come back.
Right.
I beg your pardon?
Mm-hmm.
Commercial.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Come back. So there are a few things that I had to tailor to that. Mm-hmm. And also, there were so many characters in this. There were four adult children, the main matriarch, and her husband.
Wow.
So I went in there and I said, you know, we got to cut a character. Otherwise, there's not enough story. And he was like, nope, can't cut. And I was like, well, then everybody's going to get about 5 pages of story. Their entire thing. And he was like, then do it.
Then do that. Okay.
Then do that.
Okay.
And he said, okay, each person gets 5 pages of story or 6 pages of story. You better make that work. So it was, and you know, I'm glad we didn't cut that character out because, you know, that character.
Wait, which character was it? Because I saw
Charlotte, the one played by Tichina Arnold. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because in the book, she had the least amount of growth.
Right.
You know, she was just like, I'm mad. Mm-hmm. Right. And then she's like, I'm still mad.
Right.
And then she's like, I am so mad. You know, so I had to create an arc mm-hmm. for her as well. But then it turned out that each character had one scene per act. Mm-hmm. And each character also had an act break. Mm-hmm. So it turned out that it worked out really mm-hmm. well in mm-hmm. terms of that kind of storytelling. Mm-hmm. But it was a hard one. And
how long from the time you got the job to the time they shot the movie? How long?
Yeah, I got the job, I think, in May or June of 2011. Mm-hmm. And the movie aired in April of 2014?
Yeah. It had to be, yeah.
Yeah, wow. 2014.
Wow.
Because I was mad because I missed it. My mother was watching, and I came down to San Diego, and then when I finally came in, I got to the part, like, it was like at the halfway point. And every time it came on TV, I was like, I'd always come in at the same halfway point. So one of these days, I'm actually going to see it from the beginning. I could get a little bit closer to the beginning, you know? And it's like, is it Whoopi? Okay, they're on. Come on, come on, let's watch it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So it had to have been last year.
Well, it's funny because I was telling Sharnal that we did a panel at the Writers Guild that I moderated the panel for the nominees and winners for the NAACP Awards. I was telling her, in front of everybody, because I'm not afraid to tell people that
shut up, girl.
So silly.
That I watched it in San Diego during my mom and dad's anniversary with my partner and my mom and dad, and we all sat there just crying, like at the end. It was so sad, you know what I mean? But in a good way. It made you made you feel,
because they're sitting in the circle
together,
and they're reading it, and it's like that closure.
I'm really glad that worked, because I read that and I was, and again, producer, exec director was like, we need the letters at the end, you know? And I like to write tears. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to write as little as possible. Mm-hmm. Say what you need to say and then
shut up. Shut up, yeah.
Get in the
scene. Get in and get out.
And get out.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, just quick. Mm-hmm. And it was a completely different experience for me, because I had to write these long scenes, these long emotions, sometimes one or two emotional turns. I like to write a clean scene. Mm-hmm. We're talking about this. This happens. We're done.
Thank you, Jesus. Thank you.
Yeah, just in and out. Okay. So I had to write these.
We're getting married. Let's go.
Yeah. Right. It's like long engagements. I don't want somebody to say, we're getting married. It's like, when are you getting married? Oh, 3 years from now. Then don't tell me now. I'll give you
yeah.
You know, I want to hear somebody say, we're getting married. When? Tomorrow. What? Congratulations.
Yes.
I don't want to hear about it for 3 years. I don't care.
Right.
So, so I had to write these long scenes, and we got to the letters at the end. I was like, this is going to kill them. Mm-hmm. So I tried to write it just as quick as possible. It's like, dear whatever, I love you. Stop fucking around. You're a mama. You know, he was like, no.
mama.
Make it. So a lot of the text from the letters was taken straight out of the book. Uh-huh. It was like these, if you see it on the page, these like 3-inch long passages. Mm-hmm.
Right. Too much black on the page.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get crucified. And so it's nice to see that it worked, to hear from you, Hilliard.
Well, what
that
it was why it worked for me. And I don't know if it's in the, I haven't read the book, so I don't know if it's what's happened in the book or not.
But
the choice that instead of I read my own, you give
and
it to the person.
The
you give it to the person that you're having the issue with in the book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's what moved me more.
Right.
So it made them have to feel you because they read it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was sitting there, because I know it probably took them all day to shoot those scenes, because we know how it is to get the coverage. Mm-hmm. But they went home so tired just from the emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of reading them and hearing them over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I just had to get that one done.
Yeah,
really
quick. And I was against it. I was just like, no, we can't do this. No. And he was like, do you want to keep this job? Then we're, not literally, but you know, I was just like, no, this is gonna kill the movie. But if that's what you want to do, mm-hmm. fine. Okay. And it seemed to be, if not the most powerful thing, one of the most powerful things in the story.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And then he was like, make it longer. I was like, are you serious? Make it longer. He's like, add 3-4 more lines. I was like, do you want me to never work again? Mm-hmm. Add 3-4, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it was necessary. Mm-hmm.
And I think also too that the cast that you had, because one of my pet peeves is like, you know, to me, casting is huge.
It's everything.
Huge.
And it was like, I kept imagining one, and every time I would see that sequence at the end, I'd be like, all right, here comes the tissue again. Here we go. But it'd be like, I kept imagining, like, if somebody else was given that material, another actor, I don't know if they can carry it off. Because like you said, I kept thinking to myself, man, I bet you that script, that was some long-ass monologues in there. But because you're so measured, and because the character, you're so invested in it, that it didn't seem long, it seemed right, you know?
Yeah.
But to hear from you, like, oh my God, and that you write kind of the way I write, which is like, you don't need a lot of stuff in there.
No.
No dialogue. And they're telling you, put it in. and you're like, oh my God, this could be the end of my career. Mm-hmm. But yeah. It actually worked.
And I had to add a letter too, because in the book, the young woman who was abused, she wasn't in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, she wasn't in that scene at all. So then I had to write my own letter. I was like, oh, for goodness sake. Mm. You know, just one more.
Right, more.
But yeah, that really worked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I just want to talk about that because that is pretty current in what just happened this year. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I know you were writing a lot of other genres. So let's just go back really quick. Just tell people where you came from, how you got into the game.
Okay.
Because I do want to talk about you being an executive and then talk about your writing, you know, genre stuff. That's okay. Important.
Cool. So, you know, it's not all that interesting. My parents are from Trinidad. They
oh my God, Trini! The Trini people! Okay.
Jump out, Trini!
Go ahead now.
He sounded like Big Frida, didn't he?
That's a soca style. Then you got the calypso, rock me up on the music, because you know I'm addicted.
Yes.
So my mom.
I like ska and reggae myself, but you know that's my thing.
We'll still talk to you.
Yeah, you can still sit at the table.
It's your podcast. Yes, you can do that.
So my mom's name is Sherma. My father's name is Reynold. So that's where that comes from. Good. They met in Toronto, and I was a shotgun baby, actually. But I was always sort of own way and, you know, a loner. So a lot of reading, a lot of television. And, you know, they were working, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, again, a lot of television. Mm-hmm. You know, they
sound like you, Lisa. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You only child?
Pardon me?
Are you only child?
No, I have a little brother and the neighbors actually didn't even know my parents had kids until my little brother came along. Yeah. Up and down the neighborhood making noise in his big wheel.
So she was the cerebral,
yeah,
the quiet one. It's like, they got kids over there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it wasn't until he came along they were like, you could do bad on your report card? You know? Because he wasn't interested. We were just two completely different people. Right. And he was more interested in being outside and being physical and playing and da-da-da-da. And I was like, I don't want anybody to touch me. Like, do I talk to them?
Oh, God.
It's like, what could they possibly say that's more interesting than V.C. Andrews?
Okay, thank you. Way too young. Flowers in the Attic. What are you talking about? I was like 10 when I read that book. With the pictures? Did you have the original book, them scary pictures?
On the chapters?
Or the covers, like they have the little thing open the cover and they have like these bone white, creepy looking white people.
Why?
That was my shit, people. VC Andrews, come on.
You know? But my parents are, you know, big on education. It's like, what are you reading? You're just reading? Okay, we don't care. You know?
As long as you learn some shit, right?
Yeah. So TV all the time, even when I was doing my homework and I still got really good grades. So like, all right, keep the TV on. And then I was always a nerd too, because I always picked the better school to go to as opposed to the fun school to go to. So, oh my God, we're going way back. This is so stupid. But anyway, coming out of, what we call grade 7 and 8, I was like one of the only black kids in class, and they were merciless. Really? It was like the two worst years of my life.
Oh my God. She's like my Canadian twin up there, right? Like junior high. It was the worst.
Oh my gosh. They made me so militant. I was just like, white people. White people are so white people. You know?
Wait, did you read 8th grade Malcolm X too? Wait, you sound the same.
I think I did.
Oh my God.
And
that was me.
Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh God,
when I was really
young. Yes.
And the Chrysalids. Too, and I was like, oh my gosh, these are my, why, you know, I have behind things, I'm very, you know, anyway, sorry,
anyway,
nerding out on you.
Look, Wonder Twin Powers,
okay, activate. Oh my God, it's like someone else who feels my pain for today. Okay, I got it.
So coming out of that, you know, it's just like kids being kids, right? Kids don't know anything. And coming out of that, I was like, I'm gonna go to a really good school and I'm gonna be really successful. So I went to an all-girls school. I picked the all-girls high school to go to, which became very selective the year after. And then I was like, okay, so then I'm going to go to a Canadian equivalent of an Ivy League university. Mm-hmm. And while I was in high school and whatnot, I got into drama and acting. I wanted to act.
Oh, really?
At first. Yeah, but then I quickly realized in my 20s that I get hungry. And I don't want to be angry all the time. So I studied stage and screen in university. Okay. Because I got there and immediately decided that I didn't want to be there because it was in Kingston, Ontario, which is north. And cold.
Ooh, it's cold.
And again, very, very white. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I wasn't like super black anyway. I was like hiding in high school. It's just like, I hope they don't realize that I listen to Morrissey. You know? It's like nine other black girls there. Just like, oh my God. They're going to kick me out of the club if they realize that I like the Smiths. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the Cure.
Oh my God, the Queen is dead.
Yeah. Oh my God. So it's just like, I didn't even know what I was, but I never wanted to be anywhere that I was. Right. I was like, you picked that school, you stay there. I was like, fine, I'm gonna study what I want. And she was like, good, just study and come out of there with a degree.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I did a stage and screen. And then right after that, I wasn't sure what to do. Mm-hmm. And I had a counselor up there. And she said, well, why don't you try film school? And I was like, why don't I try film school? Mm-hmm. So I applied to NYU and Columbia and York University mm-hmm. in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And Columbia is the only school that accepted me.
Really?
And I was like, oh, well, then... fuck you guys.
Okay.
You
know?
Like, I get to go to
okay.
the
States. Yeah. I'm going to go to Columbia. All right, fine.
And I had no business going to New York and living on my own at that age. But again, West Indian parents. It's mm-hmm. like, for school? Okay. No, we'll help you. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I went, I'm not going to cry, but it's because my mom cashed in her retirement money.
Really?
To pay for my
your education.
First, yeah, mm-hmm. my first semester of tuition. And mm-hmm. that's how much it was, like, wow. first semester.
Oh, wow. I had a friend who went to Columbia. I know that money yeah. is serious. Yeah. I know yeah. it's serious.
And then my father felt shame. And he cashed in, you know, like not even his whole retirement. My father had a good job. My mom made like $11 an hour mm-hmm. for like 30 years or something mm-hmm. crazy like that on her feet. Mm-hmm. And my dad was a telephone repair guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that trade was paid a lot better. And he had stock dividends mm-hmm. in the largest company in Canada. Mm-hmm. So he cashed in some. And yeah, they paid for my first year of school. Mm-hmm. And it's the only reason I got to go.
Wow.
So I came out of there with an MFA. And then I had to come home because Americans are really stingy about
no,
staying
they are not.
In their country.
No way.
It's like stingy. It's like, you finished school? Good.
Get the fuck out. Okay.
Look, they're like, you got 30 yeah. days, bitch. 30 days.
Yeah, cool. So it was kind of that. And then I came home for a boy. It was just a horrible relationship that I still write about today.
Oh, the love. Oh.
Awful. Mm. Awful, soul-crushing, mm-hmm. esteem-eviscerating relationship.
Mm-hmm. We all know that.
And we have to have, we got to have one.
You got to.
Yeah. You got, yeah.
But yeah, I came home, and I didn't know what to do. And I had this degree. And, you know, in Canada, an Ivy League degree is hard to come by. So,
oh, really?
You know, it made me more impressive mm-hmm. on the page. Yeah. So off the resume, I got interviews and I got a job at Hot Docs, which is, I think, the largest documentary festival in North mm-hmm. America. Mm-hmm. And I did some stuff for them. And then I moved over to TIFF, Toronto International Film Festival, mm-hmm. again, based mm-hmm. on the resume.
Mm, big one.
Yeah. And so I worked with them for a little bit. Mm. And I wasn't getting anywhere with the writing. Mm. And somebody gave me some advice, and they said, well, go to the CFC, Canadian Film Center, which mm-hmm. was started by Norman Jewison and a bunch of people. And I was like, I'm going to be paying for school until I'm 50. I don't want any more school. Right. But they had a program called Professional Screenwriting mm-hmm. Program, which was not focused on craft so much. It was building your business, building your brand, mm-hmm. How to get work and keep work and whatnot, and meeting people who are at your level. Hopefully, you know, mm-hmm. I wanted to meet people at my level and form a kind of community. So I went there and I wrote so many strange and terrible and good things. But it was a grinder, and it was really good for about 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then I came out of there, and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do now for money. I have no idea. Maybe I'll just go back to the festival. And there's a private network in Canada called CTV. It's now Bell Media, I think. And they called over to the film center looking for recommendations for an exec to work on a writer-specific funding program that they had was called Writer Only. And they wanted somebody who had a writer sensibility because the network was working directly with the writer, no producer intermediary at all. The network was footing the whole bill for everything. So you got your full script fees, you got a researcher if you needed to. You got, I don't think you guys have it here, but you should have someone who's called a story editor.
Yeah, we have story editors.
Okay, but they help you. They work with you. On, and they're called story editors. Okay. We don't have the same kind of staffing. Well, we do, but anyway. Specific, a different kind of story.
Sure,
and all that gets paid for out of this fund. So the film started recommending me, and I went over there, and I interviewed, and I thought, there's no way they're going to give me this job. So I'm just going to go over there. And so they see me and then give me some of this money when I apply. And then they ended up hiring me, which was crazy. So that was my first corporate gig. And then I thought, okay, I'm just going to go in. I'm going to do this writer-only business. But immediately, I think, and I'm fortunate that they recognized that I could do much more than that. So they expanded my role to overseeing current productions and development within the program and outside of the program. So I ended up overseeing a show called Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Y'all know that show.
Which is, yes, I worked with Drake.
He's before, before he became Drake.
I worked with Aubrey. Really nice. Oh my God, people always kick me when I tell this story. Aubrey came up to me and was like, I'm going to be a rapper.
And you was like, and you laughed, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I was like, good for you. You know, I'm glad. Like, I didn't know if he was good or whatever.
Just
like,
see, she's so positive. She's so positive.
Why wouldn't he be good? Right. I was like, good for you. And he's like, give me a CD. I was like, cool. And I said, you know what? As a musician, you know, and it was like, it was around Caravana time, like our big West Indian festival or something.
Oh my God, I got it.
And I used to play Mass every year until like up to 10 years ago, every year, from a baby.
Because they said, when I said it, said like Toronto has like the most Caribbean people outside the Caribbean.
Oh, do they?
Anywhere else in the West, like if you can't get down to the Caribbean, go to Toronto.
So he was like, and I was like, okay, so your CD, good. And he was like, yeah, you into rap? And I said, yeah, I'm totally into rap. Of course I'm talking about. Of course I'm into rap. And it was Caravana, right? So I was like, so are you into soca? And he was like, oh, I hate soca.
Really?
And I was like, well, as a musician, you should be listening to all kinds of music. Right. You know, soca, whatever. He's like, I hate soca. I said, well, then I'm not listening to your CD.
Really?
And I gave it back to
her. Okay, so she had like the first Drake CD that could have been sold on eBay in front of the movie. And, but because he didn't like soap, you know, I understand though. Because
no,
he,
if you're a musician,
if you're supposed to be a musician, you're supposed to be listening to everything.
You know, and Drake. He's like the biggest hype man for Toronto right now. And Toronto is West Indies. Like, I like reggae. And I was like, well, there's more to West Indies.
Oh my God.
Jamaica is not the only country in the Caribbean. Thank you. I like soca, soca. And I was like, well, then you can keep your CD. And he's like, no, take it. And I was like, fine, I'm going to take it, but I'm not listening to it. And
wait, where is the CD?
I stuck it in the bottom of my desk drawer. And when I left the job, it stayed there.
Really?
We need to call. We need a phone call. We need to make a phone call. Hi. She used to work here like years ago. I'm going to need you to send that CD right quick.
Exactly. That's hilarious.
And then I saw him years later. Did he remember you? Yeah,
okay.
I was hanging out with a friend of mine who was a fashion star, and we were at some kind of basketball, whatever. And I was like, Aubrey! And he was like, Drake. And I was like, Aubrey! And I was like, you're good. I like your stuff. And he was like, thank you. And I was like, but you still have to listen to soca. I care what you say. But he probably wouldn't remember me now. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I was a production exec on that show and another lesser-known show that the company did. And I developed the first movie that came out of Canada that had a predominantly black cast.
Really?
And it came across my desk because somebody pitched it to my boss, and she gave me the pitch and said, you know, we kind of like this. We're not sure what to do with it. We don't know who could possibly write this. And I said, I know who could write this, you know. And one of my, like, older brother friend mentors is named David Sutherland, or he goes by Suds now, Suds Sutherland. And he's really well known in Canada, and he's making his mark here. And I had worked with him when I was 17 on his first movie and my first acting gig. And I was a lead in his movie. And anyway, so we've known each other since then. And I was like, David Sutherland could do it. He could write it and direct it. And then I called him and was like, don't fuck this up.
Okay. I have set you up. Don't mess this up.
And he came in, you know, he killed the meeting, and you know, we worked on the script from the beginning.
Really?
And yeah, we had a little tussle about it because, you know, he wanted to do this thing where it was really cool, actually, where he wanted to kill the main character, who we thought was the main character, halfway through the show. And then people were like, oh, my God, he killed the main character. Now what it's about? And it becomes a secondary character coming up. Mm-hmm. It was about gun violence and whatever. So the main character got shot. Mm-hmm. And then the secondary character had to figure out if he was going to talk to the police and what kind of life he was going to live after that. But and I'm looking at you guys because you know structure. And he was like, so I'm going to kill the main character at the end of the second act. And I was like, no. No, you're not going to kill the main character at the end of the second act. You're going to kill the main character at the end of the first act. Mm-hmm. Because that's, you know. And he was like, no, I'm going to do the second act. I was like, you're going to do it in the first act. and then he turned in the script and the character died at the end of the second act. I was like, you could put it there. Mm-hmm. But when we edit it, it'll be in the first act.
Right.
And then 2-3 drafts later, he was like, oh, yeah, no, you were right. I'm going to put it in the first act. I said, I know I was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So we did that. We shot the movie, and it went on to win.
What was the name of it?
Called Doomstown.
Okay.
And it went on to win something called a Gemini, which is now a Canadian Screenwriting Award. But it was our version of the Emmys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it won Best Director.
Really?
And it won Best Script.
Okay.
And it won, I think, Best Lead Actress.
Mm-hmm.
And up to now in Canada, there's never been that many Black people on screen.
Really?
There's like one. Oh, thank, no, he was Native. So I don't even know if there was a white character. Oh, no. One guy buying crack in the hood was white.
The one.
So I did that movie, and then I did another movie about road rage, which is a really, really great story. Again, the pitch came across my desk from this kind of new writer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was.
So you were open to young writers at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. And it's, you know, he came in, there was a colleague working with me at the time, and then she left soon after. And we were like, you know what? Road rage is really hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back with this 2-page thing, and I was like, this is fantastic.
Mm.
You know, and he was like, okay, do you want me to do notes? Do you want? I was like, notes? No, I don't have notes on this. It's fantastic. And we put it, give it to my bosses, see if we're all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw him a couple of weeks ago, and he reminded me of that. And then everybody got excited, and we, you know, got him all contracted up, and he did the outlines. Like, this is amazing. He's like, do you have notes? I was like, no, I don't have notes. You know, why do you want me to have notes? Because that's too much work. If I don't have notes, I don't have notes.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that movie, and it actually competed with Doomstown
for
and it won Best Cinematography.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I think. So then. I got the creative bug back, you know, and I was like, I'm missing my writing, but I like this job. I like grocery money. So,
I like to eat.
I did. Had
gas in my car.
Yeah. So I did like 8-9 cycles of improv, and I did a little bit of stand-up for a year and a half.
To get back?
Yeah, to have a little outlet. Mm-hmm. And then I made a short film, and then I was like, okay, now I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was trying to get like itchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't want to be working with artists if you're a frustrated artist yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. So I did this.
Our next guest just walked in. He just over there laughing.
I got impatient and I killed a project and I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, snap, that was bad.
Really?
I need to go.
Okay.
And I'm still sorry about that. And one of them is still mad at me. But you know what? If I ever see him, I will, you know, I mean, I would write him a check if I had money. but I'm still sorry about that because it was awful.
Really?
And it would have been a slog. But I didn't have to kill it. You know, we already had the money and the budget. I'm sad about that.
Yeah.
And I left soon after that.
Okay.
Actually, and I got poached from the company that produces Degrassi.
Mm-hmm.
And I got poached because she says, well, if you come work for me, you're independent now and you can write a script on one of our shows.
Oh, really?
So I went over there and wrote a script for her show. And then because I was independent, I took another job writing a biopic for Canada's most famous rapper named Maestro Fresh West.
Okay, yeah.
And he did a song called Let Your Backbone Slide.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to the adaptation and biopic and whatever, you know, I would meet with him and be like, okay, so tell me about the hard stuff in your life. Didn't happen. I was like, okay, well, how did you get to where you were? I made it happen.
Oh,
I was like,
no.
Well, did you, what about the times where you made it happen?
Wow.
I was like, well, then how did you get your video? Did you, how did, made it happen?
Wow.
So then I said, okay, well, I'm going to have to make some stuff up.
Damn.
Yeah. So I had to invent this whole thing stemming from the fact that his parents were West Indian and his mom didn't want him to be in music and they had a falling out and she threw him out of the house. Really? So I had to create this and invent this whole thing. And then my boss at the production company got mad at me because she was like, well, I thought you worked here. And I said, well, I thought I was independent. So, you know, is my work suffering? Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, she, again, another particular, I've worked with a lot of particular personalities. Sure. Mm-hmm. So I had to leave again. And there was, I left because I had a gig and then the gig fell through and then I had no gig and I just bought a condo and I was like, oh boy. And then, but then something else came up, which was really lucky. And it was just development at the time. And then they got a series order. It was called The Kink in My Hair and a West Indian comedy, you know, okay. Yeah. Based on a play that a woman named Trey Anthony wrote that just did huge, huge, a series of monologues.
So is she like the Tyler Perry over there or some shit or what?
She, yeah, I don't know that she'd like to be compared to Tyler Perry.
I just mean in the sense of being successful with plays. That's
yeah,
all.
But again, you know, it's Canada, so she had the one play.
Okay. She didn't have 19. Yeah. She didn't have 19 going at one time.
One play.
It's okay.
But it was very affecting and it was incredibly successful. Touched a lot of people because a lot of stories got told. So they're trying to adapt it into a show, and that came across my desk when I was at CTV.
Okay.
And it was a 1 hour at the time, but I pushed it through and we had a contract and I was like, but you guys, it's not gonna go unless you make it a half hour. She said, we don't wanna make it a half hour. Really? And I said, okay, well then I gotta let you go because you know, we wanna make it has to be a half hour comedy. Mm-hmm. And then they went away. By the time I got back on it, it was a half hour comedy.
Really?
Yeah. So
them bitches smart enough. Okay.
They learned. They just slow to learn.
They had to go through a big, you know, series of whatever. And so they did the first season, which I did a freelance on. Mm-hmm. And then they got the second season. And then they lost their showrunner person in place. Mm-hmm. And there was nobody else around. So I didn't have the traditional experience, but the combination of the network and the independent production and the writing and the fact that, you know, I am West Indian and I know about a hair shop and whatnot.
She's like, I get my hair did every once in a while.
So they took a chance on me and they made me a showrunner from essentially a staff writer position here to a showrunner.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, and it was amazing. I learned.
So how did you prep yourself for that? What kind of things did you get? Did you talk to other showrunners? What did you do to get ready?
I did. There was a showrunner training program, kind of. Not as,
not as detailed as Jeff's.
Not as intensive as the one here, but you know, I talked to a lot of showrunners. And again, I had been talking to showrunners, giving notes. I was in on cuts, you know, cut notes in the edit room. I was also in the writing room on the independent side for a little bit. So I knew a lot about how to talk to writers and how to talk to crew and stuff like that. I visited productions and stuff. And then I just, you know, I had to pull up my panties. It's like, this is a job.
Had to figure it out.
Yeah,
right.
It's like failure is not an option. So I just went in and treated people how I thought I would want to be treated.
Okay.
And made decisions that were good, I hoped, for the show in concert with my colleagues. And that one was because the co-creators of the show, including the playwright, were numbers 1 and 3 on the call sheet, but also exec producers and also writers of 1 or 2 episodes during the season.
Okay.
And they were challenging
in
terms of what they demanded and what they wanted and what they wanted the show to be versus what the network wanted the show to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, you know, I mean, actors are a strange and wonderful subsection of the human race.
We all know that. Right?
So, you know, when you're in front of the camera 12, 14 hours a day, and then you got this thing going on, and you, the show's got your name on it, you know, you can get a little tricky. It can get a little tricky. So I learned a lot about, like...
How much did the show change from the first season and from you taking over?
Well, they were already... well into how they wanted it to change. They got a new shooter, and the look changed a little bit, and we had to tighten up the scripts. You know, but that's just growing pains, right?
Absolutely.
And you coming in saying, we ain't having all this extra. Get in, get out.
So that's just growing pains and, you know, production schedules and personalities and stuff like that. But second season was really successful. But there was no audience. So we got canceled.
Is there a way I can get like an episode of the show to see it? Because it'd be interesting to see that type of show.
Yeah, I wonder.
You know, I love my shows that have a lot of black characters.
They should just put everything on Netflix, I think. I mean, it's like ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, especially if it's a comedy, because one of my favorite shows in the UK, of course, you know, is Desmond's. So it's kind of like, be interesting to see a show in Toronto or in that area. Like, okay, what are they doing over here?
Yeah.
And their hair shop or whatever's going on over here. It's just fun to see, you know, the differences. Yeah. Now, how do we steal you to get to Haven? Like, how did you get down here?
Oh, well, I needed a vacation after that.
Okay, see, I don't like her already. Like, she making it too easy.
Yeah, no, I needed a vacation. I had a friend living down here. I'd never been here. And also, as part of the program, the showrunner program, they brought us down here and they took us to the Fox lot. And I was like,
not bad.
Wow. This is sunny. And I could get used to this, but I also...
Did she mention Sunny?
Okay.
And it's sunny. So first I came out on vacation, then I decided, you know what, I'm going to try. Let me just try. And I knew it was hard because my friend was telling me it was hard, but I didn't know that it was hard. So the first year I came down here, I got a new agent. And I thought, cool, so I'm going to get staffed. And no, I didn't. No, of course I wasn't going to get staffed.
Oh, these little Canadians coming in here. I love it.
And then they always get the top ones, don't they? They always get the best agents. They're little bastards.
But I did get hired on a Canadian show where the showrunner is Canadian via Los Angeles. And she went back to Canada and worked on a show. So I got hired on that show, which was good because I ran out of money and I was crying. And so I did that show for 8 months and it was horrible. It was horrible.
Were you guys here? Or you had
in
to go
New Vancouver.
Back? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a Canadian show. It was about a cop with split personalities. We had 8 showrunners.
What?
By the time I left.
Are you kidding me? In 8 months?
Yeah. We were on showrunner number 4 when she hired me. And then she got there and realized, I don't think she wanted to be there at all. And she might have been a little bit crazy. Because, you know, actors
let me call
are
that suspect.
But writers are another subsection of humanity, which is, you know, and me too. But, you know, I get help and I don't take it out on people. So that was... It was
we just have hypoglycemia some shit. No?
Yeah. It was awful.
Wow. Really?
And it was actually my first experience with racial discrimination.
Oh, really?
Too, because, you know, I mean, I got this network job and I was like one of the only black network execs in the country. And they were like, oh, is this affirmative action? I was like, no, it's not affirmative action because I'm smart and I'm good at what I do. And did you see this award I won?
You know? I went to Columbia, bitch. What?
Yeah. Okay. They're like, okay, so you went from staff writer to showrunner. Is that affirmative action? I was like, wow. I'm black. Wow. And the show's black.
And I'm affirming that I'm here.
I'm smart.
And I got the job because I'm
Have you read my script?
Right.
So then I got on that show.
Google me, bitch.
Okay.
Google me.
Right.
But I got on that show, and we had quite a passionate black exec who might have been like one of the last ones left in Canada at the time. And she was gunning for, you know, we need to have people of color on the show. Mm-hmm. And we need to, you know, have somebody in the room to sort of see what's going on and make sure that the show doesn't get offensive and stuff like that. So I didn't even know that I was the diversity hire.
Really?
Yeah. And I went in thinking that I was hired to, you know, and it was tough because it was my first 1 hour show. It was a police procedural. And on top of that, it had this really strange hook to it. And I was living in Vancouver, which I hated. Fucking hated Vancouver. It was beautiful, but it was just
to all the Vancouver people out there.
I hated it.
We
she
hate
just
you.
Said she hated
it. But you know, I think it was because I was lonely and I was, you know, and I was shook up and I was, you know, and they talked during movies.
Did they really?
Yeah, I had to turn around and talk to some girls. I was trying to watch that.
They got Magic Johnson Theater in Vancouver.
No, that's the thing, right? I was trying to watch Inglourious Bastards or in District 9. People just kept talking about it.
Oh, that would
and
piss
something
me off.
I can't remember. I think I was watching Funny People. And they was like, oh my God, that's so mean. Why would he do that? And I turned around, I was like, because maybe he went to a movie theater where people were talking behind him. And it annoyed the shit out of him.
That's hilarious.
Damn, shut up. And of course, they looked at me like, oh my gosh, she's so crazy. Why is she so angry? I just don't even understand. I was like, I'm angry because you're talking. And now you're talking about why I'm angry. Vancouver's beautiful. I had a heart attack. And the show is awful. And they're shuffling writers.
Oh, God.
And I made like the worst writerly mistakes whatsoever.
Like what?
Because tell I went the in kids. There and like the exec would call me and she'd be like, you know, you gotta keep in track of what's going on in the room. So she made me like the black police, like the diversity police. Really? And I didn't even know I was in that position. Mm-hmm. And then I had this snake on the other side of the table who was
snake.
You know, there was like a lot of usurping going on to see who was gonna get in charge of the show and whatnot. And then they started.
So you were a threat.
I'm not even sure. I think he.
You
maybe,
must have been coming maybe, from being the showrunner to coming on to.
Well, no,
have...
I don't think it was that. I think it was because the black exec made it known
got
to
it.
Everybody but me that she had put me in the room for this reason.
Okay.
And then, of course, they went and did something stupid. Like, they went to do this storyline about Asian gangs in Vancouver, but they assigned it to a guy that was like, oh, yeah, I dated a Chinese girl once. And we were like, really? The story is about a Japanese gang. You know? And he was like, okay, so we can have a Shinto funeral? No, that's not the religion that the person who died was. Shinto is Japanese. What? So I had to put my hand up one day, and I was like, guys, you know what? This is not a good look. And the stake across the table looked at me and said, oh, why? Because what are you, the diversity police?
Wow.
And I just crumbled.
Really?
I didn't say a word for the rest of the day. And I left there and I was bawling my eyes out. And he knew he said something. So he ran up to me and was like, oh, what's wrong? What's wrong? And now you're going to cringe. Because stupid me, I was like, oh my gosh, this job is so hard. I don't know if I could do it. I think I have frog complex. And he's like, no, shh, shh, shh. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And then told the next showrunner coming in, we got to fire her. She sucks. She's stupid. She can't handle the job. She's not good. And I made a dear friend on that show who's still my dear friend. Fantastic writer he is. And he was like, you can't fire her. Because it's going to look bad. It's going to look like you're firing her because she's black. You got to give her a script. And they were like, fine, but then we're going to fire her. So much so that I went to the new showrunner because she had assigned all this stuff and she didn't give me anything. I said, I feel like I'm being benched. And she said, yeah, you are.
Really?
So, you know.
Straight up.
Yeah. Okay.
Damn. She's
like, do your script. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do my script, right? And get out.
Damn.
So they left me alone to do my script, and there was all sorts of politics going on. We had like another showrunner shuffle, and then the snake got pushed aside, but he was still there. Blah blah blah. I do my own. I did the script on my own because you know we didn't have a room, and it had fallen apart by that time. So I broke this story on my own. It's like, luckily, I watched a lot of cop shows growing up. I mean, Miami Vice, you know, Crockett was my husband. I watched a lot of
him
stuff.
Him and his suit.
Right? So I was just like,
his
okay.
His shoes.
I know some cop stuff, you know. I've seen Boys in the Hood. Let me try and break some kind of story. And I broke the story, and I wrote the outline. And they were like, yeah, okay, yeah, this is good enough. Like, they didn't even read it, practically. Yeah. There's like, go write your thing so we can get rid of you and hire somebody else.
Right.
A.K.A. White. And then I wrote the script, and then everything paused. And I wrote it. I turned it in. I went to see Precious. And I went to bed and woke up. That's the year it was. And I woke up in the morning, and I went to work. I didn't check my email because I wasn't sure what. I was like, I don't even know what's going to happen. And I get to work, and everybody's like, your script is amazing.
Really?
This is the show.
Them bitches.
Okay. We're going to show this to our lead actor because he was freaking out because the show was crazy. And they were like, we're going to show this to him. We're going to calm him down. This is the show. You know, your job is safe.
Really?
Blah, 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 blah. And then I got uppity.
Did you at least get it in writing? Like, I'm here on the show.
I was like, yeah.
Even though you came in with your shopping bag to take snacks and stuff, like, they about to fire me. I'm taking these fruits.
Yeah.
I'm taking a 6-pack of water in the fridge. I might roll this chair out with me.
Oh my gosh. I had my budget set up. I was like, okay, if I borrow this from my mother, I could survive until here.
He did like Tina Turner.
Okay.
I want my name.
I'm taking this.
Oh my gosh. I was ready. I was like, packed. I was like, okay, I could probably get a loan from the bank that will float me for the next 3 months and I could beg for another job. No. And then I went in there like, your job is safe. So by the time we got to the production meeting, I was like, somebody tried to give me a note at the production meeting because I had some line in there about, you know, because somebody died and the cops, you know, I was like, the cops are going to make the funeral calls. And they're like, what does that mean? And I was like, well, what does it sound like? You know? And then, well, we don't understand that. Why couldn't they just say? And I was like, well, I thought this was a production meeting. Mm-hmm. So why don't you move scene this to the bottom of that day and, you know, save yourself an hour or so? Mm-hmm. Or is that what we're talking about? Ooh. You know? And then I had to change it anyway. But so that was horrible. Aww. But anyway, so I did that job and I came back in. I was like, okay, after that, I'm going to get staffed. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
So you came back to LA?
Yeah, I came back to LA. Mm-hmm. No staffing. Because my sample was hideous and crazy.
Really?
And yeah, it was crazy. It was a crazy sample. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. Looking back, and I'm so embarrassed. And that sample gave me the worst meeting I've ever had here in my life. Yeah, I was on Southland, which show that I loved so much.
I would have loved to write on the
show. And they hated the script. I don't blame them. Mm-hmm. But I'm with CAA, and they have a little bit of pull, so they got me into the room anyway, and the people, they hated me from before I got in the room. They really did.
Fit like this bitch, right?
They ain't offer you no water or nothing.
I mean, there's script and there's personal, you know? And that was like the worst meeting I ever had. Yeah. And I was such a fan of Southland. I was in Vancouver, and I was like, oh, Southland's coming back on. So I logged into my DirecTV account and set it to tape and everything. My agent said, that's a great story, tell them. So I told them the story, and they were like, oh, did your agent tell you to say that? And I was like, but it's true. And they just mean. Really? And then I was like, oh, I just come from Vegas and I won, you know, like $7.50 and I cashed out. And they were like, oh, you won seven. And I was like, no, $7.50. I was up seven, so I cashed out. And as I was leaving the room, I heard them say, oh, what an idiot. Who cashes out after $7.50? And I was like, I haven't even left the hallway and they're making fun of me.
Damn.
It was the worst. To this day, it was the worst meeting ever. They were mean. I mean, the script wasn't great, but they could have just said, no, we're not going to meet with her. They just wanted to be mean. And so I didn't get staffed that year. And now I get it. And I went home again, worked on another horrible show that was like, I was writer number 35.
What?
In that
cycle. Is it just more the way it happens in Canada?
No, you know what I think it is? It's like when a person creates a show, but they don't have the expertise, the experience, and the say to say, this is my show, this is how I'm gonna do it, and the network doesn't trust them, and then they pair them up with someone or they bring somebody else in, and that person gets pushed out, and then there's other agendas at play, and not, you know, to make the best show, but I'm gonna use this to do this, or I'm gonna make this kind of show, then that's where things unravel. So this other show was another one of those situations. Awful. And the people I worked with were great, but my script got eviscerated on my birthday. And I had the flu, which is nothing because work is work, right? But that just made me feel so sorry for myself.
She has these great highs.
And really,
because my colleagues were like, oh, we like this. And this is how the main character should talk. And this is great. And da, 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 da. And the network hated everything. The story, the dialogue, the characters, the font, the paper it was printed on.
We don't like this courier font. We don't
everything.
The brand she used to put the script together. This drives me crazy.
And we had two end users. We had Fox International and we had CTV. And up to that point, they had never agreed on anything except how much they hated my script. And they're like, did you hate this part? What? We hated that part. Damn. But what about this part? That part sucked so much shit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I got eviscerated. And I was like, what am I doing? But luckily, you know, my showrunner had to rewrite it. And we had to gangbang it and whatnot. And then I got out of that job. And luckily, I made enough money to come back down here. Yeah. And I said, okay, come on. This time, I got to get staffed. If I don't, I'm not leaving here. Unless I run out of money and they make me. And I didn't get staffed.
Wow.
Because
again,
it's hard. And I had a new sample and it was a good sample too. This functional black family thing. Really great sample. And you know, it didn't fit any of the shows that were coming out. So I didn't get staffed.
We didn't have Empire and How to Get Away with Murder.
We didn't have that. Which is funny. Because so I did the movie and blah 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 blah. And then I got on Haven because through all those jobs I met people who were good to me and I stayed in touch with them. And they were at the studio and there was the woman at NBC Universal, Karen Horn, and gently, assertively, and annoyingly staying in touch with everybody. So when the opportunity came up on Haven and I understood what a diversity writer was and what, you know, what you need to do to get in and whatnot, I was ready for it. And so a couple of those showrunners from both of those bad experiences put in good words for me. You know, so that's why, you know, you got to not burn your bridges and, you know, mm-hmm. do your job. And if you're going to be uppity with the people that, you know, you can get away with it. Sure. Or just be real charming about it. So I was lucky enough to get staffed on Haven. Mm-hmm. And Haven was the best writing family I've ever been among so far in my short career.
All right.
It was fantastic. Haven was fantastic.
And what's it like being somebody who writes genre and like the family type of thing? How do you have to weigh between the type of scripts that you write, or were your agent staffed you or stuff like that, or what do you do?
You know what, Haven was the one that came up.
Okay.
So luckily for me, when my grandfather was still with us, you know, I lived with him for a bit, and I was always with him when I was younger, and we watched all that stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we watched all of X-Files. We watched a show called Millennium. We watched a show called Unsub, which actually, you remember that? Unsub was like one of my favorites. And if there's any advice I can give, it's just like, remember everybody and remember everything. And before you meet with somebody, do your homework, which sometimes I forget to do because my latest showrunner meeting I had was with a man who worked on Unsub.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, you know, I was like, yeah, okay, this show is great. And, you know, obviously we're going to talk, but tell me about Unsub. And he was like, you're the first person I've ever met who remembers Unsub. And I'm not saying that that's what got me the job, but definitely, you know, and then I always send personal note cards afterwards to people, handwritten. And I was just like, Unsub, right? That was the Unsub one. And so, yeah, but, you know, so I'd always watch genre and stuff like that, but I didn't go looking for a genre job. And now that I have, you know, 4 seasons worth of episodes from Haven, I guess I'm the genre woman, because
that was my curiosity is you have Haven and then you have the Lifetime movie, which is
yeah,
you know, completely different.
Yeah.
So what is your agent, you know, doing now? Have you told them, here's where I want to go, or are you just taking what's coming to you? What are you doing?
I guess it was a little bit of both, you know, because they want you to identify what shows are that make you excited. And I guess being on Haven, you know, I got back into my genre.
So now you're sci-fi. Right. Like,
so now I have a bit of a sci-fi head. But I'm watching other stuff, you know, I'm watching like Secrets and Lies and, you know, Black Jesus comedy. God. And, you know, Bob's Burgers and Better Call Saul, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. The Nick and whatever. So I'm watching, you know, I have watched a lot of different
things. See, that's
the
thing. You write TV, you have to be a TV head.
You do. You have to be a TV head if you can, if you have the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to be a TV head.
So what's next?
Sleepy Hollow.
Really? You going to be on Sleepy Hollow? You didn't tell nobody.
What? You didn't tell nobody?
Why, girl, you got a high five on that.
What?
That's what's up.
Yeah. Well, the deal, I mean, I don't know even why I said that. God, that goes against everything.
She put it out there.
Got an exclusive here.
We're going to sprinkle it out.
Oh, we know before your mom.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
No, because it's like, it's not real until you
know what?
Your
we won't tell anybody.
Right. Yeah.
No one will know.
But, you know. You can't get bogged down by superstition. So they may be off. We're working it out. We're almost there.
Oh, well, good.
On Monday. I start next Monday.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah.
Because I was a little concerned.
I know.
If you know from a couple episodes from way back.
That's Lisa.
Where I was like, I was like, who in the room?
Yeah. See, my show was Walking
Dead. Who messed
up
the second season? Yeah. Like, what is going on? Do I need to come to the set?
I think they had some internal turmoil. Yeah. And I felt that way, too, because I was a genuine fan of the show from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And Nicole Beharie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
See, my show was Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Now, that shit, I can walk right in my sleep. Mm-hmm. And they need a black writer in the fucking room. There was no black writer.
Is there none?
None. You
or at least
tell.
Somebody who could just
you
say
could
nobody would really say something.
You know, we need a Jeff Thorpe in there or something.
Yeah, somebody. We need somebody. You know, something. You know, because like literally, I mean, the thing is with new shows now, you got to remember, like in the old days, they would have a show on TV and it'd be like years. They would build up an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's so cutthroat. You get like 2 episodes and you out the door. So a part of me was really, like the first season, it was like, okay, great. And the second season, I was scared. I was like, I don't know what is going on. Something is going on in that room. I don't know if they were like amazing by the success or they were really listening to the people on social media. I apologize if I said anything mean or hurtful, but if it was useful, take what you can get from it. But it was like, I was really concerned, like, they hadn't re-upped the contract. Is it coming back? And I was like, well, you know what? We got to give shows a chance. We're so hardcore and we don't give time to build an audience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm willing to hold on to the third season and see what happens. But, you know, it was, well, now, well, now, it was weird. It was
now
weird
we know season. You're going to be on. They know you're going to be on.
So the fun for me is going to be, if you get on the show and start writing episodes, like, which one's her episode? Like, when the words start coming out of Nicole's mouth, like, is that... Did she write that?
Well, see, that's the thing, right? That's the thing, because, you know, I interviewed for Empire, like, many, 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 many of the black writers.
Mm-hmm. I know, two of my friends, two, Jashika and the twins. Two of our friends got staffed. Yeah.
So, I mean, my whole fear about going into that was, you know, I'm Canadian. Again, it comes back to you, you know, I was listening to The Cure and The Smiths in high school. And,
but they, you need to have that different perspective.
I agree.
You need to have that.
Yes, but then Empire is, you know, we could do a whole, like, 4 hours on Empire, but Empire is so specifically, you know, American, African American, that I was kind of nervous, just like, I don't know if I, you know, and you know whose fault that is? Whoopi. Let me tell you why. And then I know you have
blame it on Whoopi.
Oh, good Lord.
No, it's not a blame. It's not a blame.
Come on, Whoopi.
But, and I respect, oh my gosh, her doing that movie. My father kissed her hand. My mom was, he flew from Trinidad to visit the set.
Wow.
I think it was already organized, but, you know, he extended it. Whatever. And so Whoopi was in this movie. It was like one of the greatest things for me. One of my earliest experiences wanting to be a storyteller. I remember being in a theater watching Color Purple. This is quick. And so Justin Bieber said something nonsense about the N-word. And so they were talking about it on The View. And Whoopi said, well, I give Justin Bieber a pass because he's Canadian.
Really?
And is it Star who's on the show with her? Star was like, what are you talking about? She said, well, the N-word doesn't mean the same thing in Canada. And she said, what does it mean, groceries? What are you talking about? And Whoopi said, no, I know what I'm talking about. Because I was up in Canada doing a movie last summer. And there was this, you know, she called me, she's like a brilliant young writer, just very, very talented. I was like, okay, yes. And she was like, but there were some words in that script where I was like, black people don't talk like this. You know, why? Black people don't talk like this. And, you know, so she took it to the director and she said, what is this? Black people don't talk like this. And he said, it's because she's Canadian.
Really?
And Whoopi was like, oh, okay, so that's why. Again, she didn't know. She didn't understand because black people's experience is totally different. And what Whoopi didn't know was that I didn't write that stuff, you know, because it's a production draft. And I was off doing something else. So whoever it was that was in charge of writing that wrote that.
Interesting.
And, you know, did not take responsibility for that. And, you know, the view from under that bus was not pretty. So that's why I was just like, oh, and I was... And I was trying to extend my work permit, like my extraordinary abilities work permit, to explain, you know, like why I got this job over any other black person in the country. You know, Whoopi's on TV saying that I don't really know what I'm talking about because that's not black. And it was just heartbreaking. So, you know, that's why sometimes I think, you know, I was thinking about Amber. I was like, I don't know if I can write on that show. I don't know if I'm black enough. I don't know. I don't know. I don't say girl. Like, you know, I don't do any of that. You know, but it's not about that.
No, it's not.
It's not about that.
No, and sometimes, like I said, it's like when people try to quantify what blackness, it's so varied. And also depending on where you come in the world. Like, I would love to have a room where you have different black people from different countries who are writing, because it would be fascinating what that mix would be when it comes out on the page. So when people say you can't write, what the fuck are you talking about? She's a writer.
Period. You can't write black.
But can you write a script that's good that people want to see? You know, because actors are going to bring whatever they bring to it. You know what I mean? So for them to say that, Whoopi, I am so disappointed.
I was so sad. I cried.
She made you cry.
She did.
Oh my God.
That's okay.
That's all right.
Well, look, Whoopi has great opinions.
But we got to wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up.
Let's give the kids one little piece of game, you know, that you can give them who want to be a writer, you know? And even to the people who are fresh off of staff and try to get on staff again, like, what kind of advice can you give them?
Yeah. You know what? Just emotionally, you're not alone. And it's really hard. Really, really hard. And when it's that emotionally hard and you feel, the hardest thing to do is to try to write too. But you have to.
You got to.
You have to. And one of the worst things you could do is try to write for what the marketplace looks like. because then you're not going to write anything good. So, you know, if you're lucky, you'll get beat down to the point where you're just like, I just got to write what I like. And that's the thing that's going to. And, you know, things swing.
True.
Too, because I wrote that piece from my heart and it wasn't in style until this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, don't you guys want me to write a new sample? Because I did.
I know you're still sampling.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, no, my sample's great. We already got it. So, but it's hard and you're not alone.
Sure.
And it's hard for everybody.
All right.
And if you're a person of color, don't listen to that nonsense about staff writers taking jobs away from people and stuff like that, because they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay.
Trust me.
If you need to get in, get in, and then prove yourself.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's good.
There you go.
Where can people find you at? Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I'm on. I don't say much, but you know.
What's your handle? What's your handle?
It's my name.
Isn't that easy?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm easy to find.
All right. You on Facebook? Anything like that?
I'm on Facebook, but you know, I don't really say much.
All right. So what? But when this new season of Sleepy Hollow starts, I'm going to be like,
When my shows are on, I'm always like, show. Mm-hmm. But I don't do much of, I'm not all that interesting.
Okay. What about you, Lisa? Where you at?
They know where they can find me. I'm on Twitter.
It might be somebody new listening.
Oh, that's true.
Episode.
That's right. Okay. Well, hello, people. Let me do my best. I'm on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, you can catch me on Friday Night Horror or Saturday Night Sci-Fi.
Do you do that Black Girl Nerd?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's her group.
Yes.
That's
did you do group? Hellraiser?
You didn't see my tweets.
Okay. I didn't see my tweets. Hellraiser's scary.
Well, you know what's funny? Because when people were watching that, I have to remember the youngins don't remember how subversive and how wonderful that movie was when it first came out. Now it's cheesy. It's like, oh my God. Big hair, 80s. Come on, it was the 80s. But it's fun to just talk about it and just to have the... Girl, you need to come on there. It's so much fun.
Okay.
You have to come on there. All right. Because sometimes we have to live tweet. Whenever you have an episode that comes on for your episode of Sleepy Hollow,
we
gonna live tweet that. But so you catch me on there all the time talking about something or anything, exactly. Bitching about something. Or you can catch me at Bitchflix.
Okay.
Where I write a lot of reviews, feminist critiques on film and everything. I think my last piece was It Follows. And I'm about to do a new one for, I gotta go see Unfriended.
Okay.
Because, you know, I like the gimmick of it. Mm-hmm. It's probably not gonna be good.
No,
but I'm gonna go see it. I'm gonna go see it. I'm gonna go see it. So you can catch me there.
And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You can find me on Twitter. Because I'm cool like that. Shut up, Joe.
Stop trying to make Twitter sound all fancy. Twitter. It's like, he's trying so hard to get us to go to the UK. He's been practicing his little British accent.
Look, like, every week our numbers are like blasting, and they're number two.
In London?
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
We got 40,000 listeners all over the world. So, damn it. Shit. damn England. Holla at a brother. Holla. Matter of fact, Australia, Brazil, call a brother. 999.
He's so silly.
So, look.
He's so
y'all know
silly.
How we do on the Rant Room. We silly as hell. And please go on, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We need that shit.
And Stitcher.
Stitcher's cool, too. They all right. You know, but iTunes, that's the one. We want to get in that top 10. I keep saying the top 250. Fuck that.
The top 10.
We want to be in the top 10.
Okay.
You know? Anyway, so we're going to do 2015. Just join in with us. You can join in with us, too. You know how we do it. Ready? So, on the Rant Room, we keep it street.
Yeah.
We keep it opinionated.
What?
We keep it what? Mm-hmm. 2015.
All right.
Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the Rant Room. Tongues won't be bitten. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We here to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping.
No.
Any topic, even the random.
We get to win.
I hope that you're ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the Rant Room.
That's it. That's all I got to say.